It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. Welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, along with
Tony Collins
and
Eric Billingsley.
Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Doing okay. Long time no hear.
Yeah, no doubt. Tony and I have kind of filled in for a few episodes without you. And without anybody, actually. And then I've done a couple solo, at least while talking to some artists and stuff. And I don't know if I can blame it on COVID, but we will.
I was going to say, that's what we're going to blame it on.
Right.
That's what everything's getting blamed
right,
on.
Right. Why not? I mean, well, it's COVID. That's why. But during this quarantine, first of all, how are you holding out, Eric? What's going on in your life with this quarantine thing going on?
Well, I was thinking the other day that, this is obviously a major social, a major worldwide event that, is going to change the way we live from this point forward. And I can see it already. People are already saying pre-COVID and post-COVID, but mm-hmm. I think that's just going to be reduced to virus, pre-virus, post-virus.
Yeah.
Because it really has changed a lot of things, but. I'm pretty much a homebody. Nothing more than to sit undisturbed in the dark, watching my favorite movies and new movies that I've heard great things about and making great discoveries and such. So that's my thing, And so for a long time, for the first few weeks of the lockdown, my life didn't really change much.
Well, that's what I made the comment that socially distancing is just normalized what I've been doing since I was born.
Right.
I pretty much try to avoid people as it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's one thing with me. It's like the only thing that has stopped for me is live movies or not live movies, but movies at a theater.
Right.
And live music I've missed, and also live theater. Friends of mine were supposed to be on a performance, but COVID hit and couldn't do it. So
I have been right now cast in a play that has been in rehearsal for about 8 months.
Oh yeah.
We're not constantly rehearsing. We meet every few weeks or whatever, and we do a read through to keep it fresh. And right now we are scheduled for March, and God willing, and I'm knocking on my head, knock on wood, best of all things is that they'll come up with an antivirus, a way to get rid of this once and for all. Cause that's basically what it's going to take to get a lot of people back in the theater. And I'm one of them.
Yeah. Well, our local theater here, they're doing, in fact, I'm going to audition for it. They're going to be doing some kind of play. They haven't released the name of it yet, mainly because they're waiting for the licensing and all that good stuff. But they said it's going to require us to wear face masks and face shields. And they said it's part of the play. And I'm like, I'm very curious about this now.
Right.
What kind of play requires you to wear a face shield? I want to see that.
Was it pre-existing, or was it maybe a play that was written since this is all started?
It's pre-existing from what I understand.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, we'll have to see.
Just a new spin on Oklahoma.
Well, actually, I was hoping it would be like Plan 9 from Outer Space, the musical. So
it'll be O Calcutta. O Calcutta's done sans clothing, except everyone will have be wearing masks and face shields.
I wouldn't mind that. Oh wait. But I'm curious about that. Well, I'll tell you what, one of the things, first of all, let me give my view on this COVID. Actually, I'm gonna talk to you about this, Tony, but first of all, I want to give my view on this. Is like, and it took me a while to get through it, but the fact that I, by no means am I putting this down by saying anything, it's like too bad for the people that get it, but what I'm saying is it's got a 96% survival rate. And me getting over it, I'm probably good. I'm not going to go, I'm not going to let it lock me in my house. But when asked to wear a mask, when, going out in a crowded area, I'll do that. But I'm not going to let it keep me from living my life. How do you feel, Tony?
I mean, very much the same way. I mean, and, we kind of joked about it earlier. When it all broke in March, I felt very important because I literally got a letter from the Department of Defense or something that said I was essential because I was in radio broadcasting.
Right.
I'm essential. And I thought, oh, that's so cool. I'm kind of over that now.
yeah, but way over it.
But the truly sad thing is, and we talked about it earlier, the day-to-day of it really hasn't affected my life. Very fortunate in saying that. I get up at 3:30 in the morning. I'm usually here at the station by 4 a.m. Gil and I see each other in passing for about an hour, and then I go back home. I'm very much a homebody anyway. So in that regards, it really hasn't affected me. Now, like you mentioned, I miss like hell going out to Eagle Theater to see movies.
Yeah.
In fact, probably a couple weeks ago was the first time I'd gone to the theater to see a new movie.
Right.
I went and saw Tenet. And I remember you asking, "Oh, what's it about?" And I said, "I almost don't care. It's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to go see a movie
in the theater on the big screen."
That's right. I don't give a damn what it's about.
But and it turned out to be all right then.
But yeah, I mean, you know, as far as that goes, I'll wear a mask when I'm asked to. But about the only other thing that's as affected is the ability to go out to eat.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's been kind that's of a pain in the butt, but.
Well, see, I never was. I mean, really, you find out now how much you do go out to eat. But for me, I don't think I ever really went out that much. But I am missing a lot. And I noticed we did have a lot more delivery of pizza lately. So, but yeah, I'm just not going to let it kill me.
I forgot to mention an important distinction is that I have been working from home long before any of this happened. I think I've been working from home probably about 4, maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
So, so you know, that's why my life didn't change, because it's, you know, same routine and day in and day out. Yeah. But yeah, after about a few weeks of that, I'm like, oh man, I really miss. I mean, unless I cook it myself, I can't go out and get a steak, because you can't get it to go and it'd be worth a crap by the time you get home.
Exactly. With it. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that one. That's a good thing. A really well done, or not well done, but rare for me, but well cooked steak. Although I can pretty well cook a steak without.
Well, that's
plates.
The thing. It's forced me to perfect my pan seared ribeye.
No, there you
which
go.
I'm quite proud of now.
Well, and I think it's a mental thing. I think it's like all of us. When we're told we can't do something, damn it, that's all we want to do.
Yeah.
That's all we want to do. You tell me I can't go to the theater, I want to go to the theater.
Yeah. And, you know, for the first couple of weeks, it's like, oh, I understand. Yeah, we'll not do it. And then after a while, it's like, oh, I need to go.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and in regards to live theater, since that's occupation of mine and yours, Gil, I don't know if you've noticed, but actually now the most of this was coming from the UK, and the UK actually did what they were supposed to do, and so their live theater is, it's not booming, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
It's getting back to its regular, because there's the virus is almost inconsequential there now.
Yeah.
We can't follow directions here, so it'll probably be 5 years before we catch up with the rest of the world.
Well, damn it, I'm an American. You ain't going to tell me what to do.
Well, I posted something recently on Facebook. And again, this is another thing I've given up. I found out how nasty people are on Facebook during this quarantine, because they ain't got nothing to do but bitch and complain. So, but I've kind of given up. But I did post something recently where it's like 2020 has proven to us that we're a selfish society. Not selfish in that we just won't share. It's selfish that I don't care if you live or die, you're not going to inconvenience me. And and that's exactly what I've discovered about humankind.
That's exactly what it's about. Yeah.
And
it really is.
And it's like, come on, just wear a mask. It doesn't hurt you. So,
of all the things that your government could ask you to do.
I like it that I can go into a bank with a mask.
Well, isn't it funny that particularly early on, and even now, everybody was freaking out and losing their minds because our government asked us to stay at home, sit on the couch, and watch TV. That was it. That's all we had to do.
Yeah. How can we mess that up?
And somehow we managed to screw it up. Right,
exactly. Yeah. Well, speaking of which, during the quarantine, I don't know if that's even the right word, but it seems to be the catchword everybody's using. During this period, I know that I have gotten a chance to watch a whole bunch of streaming stuff because I can't go anywhere else and watch. But let's talk about some of these things. We've Tony and I talk about this every day, and every day we say, man, we need to put this on a podcast. So every day we've got something. We're watching the same series. In fact, I'll start out with one series that, Eric, I think you really should look into. It was a 3-season series, and when they ended it, it ended perfectly. They didn't need no more. And it's Legion, and it's on FX Network. It's now on Hulu. But it's based on the son of Charles Xavier from the X-Men, and basically he's the most powerful mutant in the world, and he's gone crazy.
I watched the first couple of episodes now. I remember that.
Yeah.
And, but I couldn't figure out what was going on.
It does not get better over the three seasons. When Gil comes into work every day and he's like, oh, dude, you got to watch Legion. It is so trippy. And when an old deadhead tells you it's trippy, it's trippy.
Yeah, there's times I've seen when I made him finally got him to watch it. There's times he'd come in the studio or I'd come in the studio. He's sitting there just with this glazed look on his face like, I don't know what I saw last night.
Yeah, eventually I just had to start shutting episodes off. Because now, I will say that I am super glad that I was able to binge it.
Mm-hmm.
Because really think if I had to wait week to week,
I'd have lost it.
I'd have lost it. My attention span isn't what it needs to be for a show like that. But because I was able to cleave off three or four episodes at a shot, I was able to hang with it. Now, eventually, it kind of turned my brain to mush, and I just had to shut it off and, you know, go run the dishwasher or something just to give my brain a chance to go, okay. But Gil and I were talking. One of my favorite moments, and it is relevant to nothing within the series, except it just kind of sets the tone. One of the characters makes the observation that there is no such thing as now. There is no present. We either are always in the past or always in the future, because by the time we form the thought of it being now, that's already past.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no now. So I walked around for a day going, there is no now. There is no now. It's only past. It's only future.
Yeah.
Well, and that thought is sort of indicative, I think, of the show itself.
Well, I think one of the things I think I confused Tony about this a lot,
you confuse me a lot, sir.
But I'm going to be willing to admit this. Here in Illinois, we have legal marijuana. And there were a few, right? Now, there are a few episodes I'd get starting to watch, and I'm like, oh, no, I need to get high. And so, you know, I would do that, and it'd be a much better episode. Trust me, I loved it. Well, Tony watched a couple of them, and he goes, how can you watch that when you're high? Yeah. He goes, I was having a hard time keeping it up. So, yeah, I mean, no, it's good. And again, I think that ability and the fact that we got to binge watch it made it a much better series. And Eric, I'd recommend it, binge watching it especially, because it gets so cool, and the ending is perfect, and it's got some real thought-provoking aspects.
It is very trippy, very surreal. There's a lot of, because so much of it is happening within the mind escape of these characters, it gets really kind of wild, but it is a lot of fun.
I saw enough of I think I saw maybe the first three episodes when it first started airing. We talked about, I remember us talking about it on the show at that point. And I just couldn't hang. I was just like, and like, you're right. I mean, probably if I could have watched it back to back, I would have appreciated it more. But by the time 7 days had gone by, you know, and they show a brief preview of the last episode, I'm like, I don't even remember that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, in fact, sometimes I'd watch the next episode and then do the recap, and I'm like, wait, what? That happened in the last episode? I don't remember that. I just watched that? What? But there were times, happened?
Had more to do with the THC in your system.
Maybe. But I did start watching it when it was live on FX, and that was the first few episodes. I did stop after, like, I think I'm with you, Eric. I think about three or four episodes I stopped. And mainly because I got rid of cable and dish or, you know, satellite and all that stuff. And I went straight streaming only. And then just recently I've discovered it on Hulu. In fact, it's like around the beginning of March when all the COVID started. And so I found it is on Hulu, and I'm like, okay, let's watch this. I'm going to watch it all. And I started from the beginning, got through the end, and had a great time.
Well, and I think that's what something like this, because, you know, they aren't producing any new content as far as new movies and things like that go. It gives you an opportunity to go back and watch some of the stuff that you didn't have a chance to watch before, or rewatch some of the stuff. In fact, before I came here, I watched probably four or five episodes of Star Trek Next Generation. That's what I've been just watching on Netflix, episode after episode.
Well, that's a good investment right there.
Yeah, I've got them all. I've got the entire show on Blu-ray. I bought it probably 3-4 years ago. I still haven't made it through it yet. I'll watch a few episodes here and there, and then I'll put it away, and then I'll watch a few more here and there. It'll probably be another 3 years before I get through all the seasons.
Well, it's and honestly, like this time through, I didn't start at season one, episode one.
You.
I didn't start at the encounter at Farpoint. I just literally went like, I don't know, random season three and picked a random episode and just started and have seen some of my favorite episodes with no planning whatsoever. It just happened to land that way, so.
Well, three is when they started to get their shit together and they got some good writing and yeah.
Well, that's another thing. Talking about no new material. Well, there's some new material out there. In fact, Tony and I have been on it. Now, Eric, we're going to get to you. You watch movies more than series, but we're going to get. I have a feeling Tony and I are going to get a few movies that we're going to need to watch. But before we do that, one of the new series out, Lovecraft Country. Mm-hmm. We're talking about this before we were recording. Eric, you still haven't grasped it. Now, you're a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft, and as am I. I mean, but I think you're a bigger fan than me.
Well, and see, I really honestly think I benefit from having just a very base cursory knowledge of H.P. Lovecraft, so I can go into something like Lovecraft Country, and because it isn't sacred to me, mm-hmm. I can enjoy this show for what it is,
yeah.
And I am aware enough of the world to go, oh, that was, you know, within the first line. I mean, they kind of shot their Lovecraft load, so to speak, in the first 2 minutes of the first episode when Cthulhu comes up out of the water.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was kind of their Lovecraft shot right there.
Yeah, yeah. I'd agree with you. That was that first episode where they had the beast running through the forest. Right. That was kind of Lovecraftian. In fact, I think that was a beast in the Lovecraft novels. I can't remember the name right now. But the first season. Then after that, it's like these side stories that are kind of loosely, not based on, but just kind of refer to a Lovecraft thing here and there. And I don't know. I've come to really enjoy it, mainly because the series is based on the book Lovecraft Country. And there's like 8 different stories in that book. And I think this series, they're going to have each episode is going to be one of those stories. However, they've got one and this is one that you haven't seen yet, Eric. So we're going to maybe spoil this for you. But
no problem.
It refers to an oriental demon, Kamiho. I can't remember what they called it, but Nine Tails. And for those of you that are really nerdy, Nine Tails is one of the Pokemon. but this Pokemon is not as evil and doesn't make your body blow up like the one in Lovecraft Country. So basically, yeah, this demon, she has to claim 99 or 100 souls before she can get her, or the girl that's hosting the demon has to claim 90 or 100 souls before she can get her body back, so to whatever. And the way she gets those souls, let's just say explosions from the inside.
Yeah, it's graphic. It's gory.
Okay, well, that's enough to pique my interest. I had already intended to watch through it, but I just have been doing it at a leisurely pace. Yeah. I'm about probably 2 or 3 episodes behind.
Well, and again, it's one of those that, for better or worse, HBO is releasing it an episode a week.
Yeah,
you know,
so you let a few build up.
A few build up, and then you can binge watch them.
Yeah, well, right. This series has made me go back and I want to read the book, the Lovecraft Country book by Matt Ruff, and I wanted to read that book, but doing some research on this, like that story, the one of the Nine Tails, I can't find anywhere where it relates in the book. So maybe we're going to have a 10-episode season, and 2 stories will be not in the book. Maybe, I don't know. There's 8 stories in the book. Maybe, I don't know. But that one didn't. I couldn't find where it landed in the book. But maybe they just rewrote something completely.
Well, look at Game of Thrones. I mean, look at how much stuff they threw into Game of Thrones. It was never in the book.
Yeah, that's true too. So I guess, and they get a little artistic play. But yeah, Lovecraft Country. They've got me hooked. And in fact, so much so that I think that. That's one of the, I might go out and own that one. I might be owning that one so I can, I don't know though. I haven't decided yet. I've changed my mind on owning movies lately. Cause anymore, I went to go pick up, I wanted to see Tommy, you know, by The Who, you know, and I wanted to see that movie and I looked, searched for it online. It wasn't available. I'm like, oh darn, I wanted to really watch the movie. Then I walked by my collection of DVDs. I'm like, oh, there it is. Oh, I didn't have to do all that.
Yeah.
I have the Blu-ray steelbook. of Tommy. Nope. But I'm not a big fan of Tommy. Tommy's one of my least favorite rock operas, but so be it.
Well, I think streaming has, at least for me, it's made me lazy.
Yeah.
I can't possibly walk three steps across the living room to put in a DVD.
Right?
My God, what are we, animals?
Yeah, I feel that every time I stream something that I'm like, I know I've got that on video and I'm just too lazy to go look for it.
Right?
Well, I've even gone so far as now I don't even like buying physical copies of video games.
Yeah.
What? I got to go put a disc in. And I'm not alone. The new PlayStation and Xbox, right. You can buy an option that doesn't even have a disc drive in it.
Oh, man.
They're just a hard drive and you download or stream them.
They know we're lazy.
Yeah, they know we're lazy.
Well, that's where things are going.
Yeah, and that's the one thing. Maybe I'll, again, I don't know. I've been actually getting rid of some of my Blu-rays and my DVDs, so maybe. I'm weaning down. I figured out I'm getting old, and when I die, I can't take it with me. So I got to get rid of it. So,
but here's my perspective, and I think we may have talked about this before. I love physical media, and I'm mourning. I mean, it's been dying now for a while. And I've been mourning it every step of the way. And, you know, the final stake in the heart, it feels like it's just around the corner. Here's the thing. And this is video nerd stuff, but it's nerd, so it fits. I want to see the best possible presentation and the best sounding copy of that movie or that series that I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no comparison between the bit rates on a Blu-ray and the bit rate on even the best of streaming services. Mm-hmm. You just can't pump that much data through most of the internet right now. I think of it, you know, we're just not far away from that point, but yeah. So there's that. And here's the other thing is that, and this has been a sore point ever since home video got its start on VHS and people started taping stuff off of TV or whatever, and then the studios were like, we're not getting paid for that.
Yeah.
So they finally got these economic models in place for us that, you know, buy these movies at an affordable price and take them home. But they still maintain, and there have been cases in court about this, that it's only they're licensing that movie to you.
Yeah.
And that you don't actually own that. You own the physical media, but you don't own the movie on the disc. And that technically they could reclaim that from you if they want. I mean, that's not going to happen.
But, yeah.
Because you own the disc, and you therefore, for all practical intents and purposes, you do own the movie on the disc.
Right.
Even though that may not be the legal definition or the legal decision. But if it's all streaming, and you buy something, and I've bought a few on digital, but mm-hmm. I'm reticent to do so for this very reason, is that if that company goes belly up,
yep.
bye-bye collection.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's, I mean, I think that's why something like the way Disney recently released Mulan is interesting for conversation. Obviously, okay. Because of the coronavirus, they couldn't release it into theaters, so what they did is they put it on Disney Plus, but you have to pay an additional $30, I think it was, to watch it. Now, you essentially are buying the digital copy, but you only have access to that as long as you have the Disney Plus service.
Right.
So,
yep.
And that's a good point. And that's one of the things that, although I still, I'm whittling down everything. So I don't have as many material possessions, just nerdy ones. So, but yeah, I think that's
and
what
most of them are here at the station.
Yeah, exactly. See, I had to get rid of them out of the house.
Right.
But basically what I want to say is that with Lovecraft Country, it's actually making me think about owning the physical property. That's how much I've been endeared by it, I guess. And
a lot of people are.
Yeah. And I think the aspect that it kind of reflects what's going on in society today, not the disease,
right.
But the racial strife.
Right.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's the point where that I enjoy most about the series
mm-hmm.
is not the supernatural content. It's not the references to the Lovecraft. It's the characters
and
their views and the things that were happening to them at the time. That's what I find interesting. And I haven't yet. And I know that it is their intention to bring to weave those two things together. But I've not seen that happen yet. You've got the character stuff over here, and then you've got the magic stuff over here. But the magic doesn't really, at least at this point that I've seen so far, doesn't really have anything much to do with the characters' relationships.
Yeah, I think they haven't quite, I mean, it's good, but they haven't done it, I think, as well as perhaps the Watchmen series did. I thought they were amazing at how they weaved the characters in with the conversation of the racial issues.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah. And yeah, with that, I think that's one of the things, though, that I'm hoping that by the end of the season, they'll have that wrapped up.
Yeah, hindsight will be 2020.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's the case. But, I mean, I will say that in the first episode, that sundown drive, you know, to get out of the
that
county.
That was the most stressful and tense scene I've ever seen or seen recently in cinema. And it was literally a low-speed chase or, you know, 55 miles an hour chase.
Because they knew if they went over, they'd get pulled over.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, they did a fantastic job, I thought, of filming it. I mean, it was great. It was well, I mean, you know, I'm a white dude sitting on my couch in my living room, and I was stressed out.
Yeah, exactly. Me too, yeah.
Yeah, that was really well done. I have to say that.
Yeah, that's one of the things, with scenes like that, that's what keeps me going through and I think every episode has at least one scene like that, and I think that's what keeps me going.
Well, that's, you know, I made the comment to you after watching the first, I think that first episode is, it is almost a relief when the monsters finally show up, because at least it's not the racist.
Right.
Because, holy moly, right. I have never been so happy to see vampire demon dogs in my life.
Like, okay, get rid of the white folk. Thank you. Yes. I'm with you. So, well, that brings me to another series that we've been exploring. And actually, they're just released season 2. Tony and I are big into this. It's The Boys. Which is I can't remember the name of the who published that series, but the comic book The Boys is about it's kind of like who's watching the Watchers. It's like kind of like Watchmen in the fact who's keeping eyes on these superheroes. And
yeah, well, what do you do if superheroes aren't born but they're made? They're made by a corporation.
Yep. And I think that's one thing I love about the series. Right now, it reflects 100% what's going on with society. Because I can guarantee you there's a character in there named Homelander, who's like the Superman, if you will. And I just know that in today, actually, I think he's like Donald Trump, actually. So, you know, he's always looking at his ratings. He's looking at how people are talking about him. And yet he's got the power to destroy their lives.
Right.
And does so in a couple of cases. But it's just, you know, he's trying to get people on his side. And I think there's a moment where his PR person says, well, you don't need everybody on your side. You just need 5,000 warriors on your side. And I'm like, wow, that's exactly what's going on with Facebook and politics right now. You don't need to have everybody agree with you. Just a few that are monstrously going to attack everybody.
Yeah, you just have to have the vocal minority in your corner.
Yeah. So,
well, now that you mentioned the point that these superheroes are being created by corporations or by the government. It sounds like in the case of Homeland, but as tools to control the population, I'm assuming that's what this is about. That is an interesting idea. I might have to check it out.
Yeah. And I would definitely give it a shot. It's a fantastic story. And if you're at all interested in comic book material, I think it's fun to see. You know, because let's face it, if you had a character like a Superman, what happens if he isn't good and wholesome and altruistic? What happens if he is every bit the colossal douchebag he has the power to be? Because who's going to stop him?
Right. And then the Homelander refers to himself as a god several times.
Yeah.
Okay. I have to insert this here because I haven't seen the show. But I did see Brightburn.
Oh, I love it. I want to see that so bad. God. I want to see it so
bad. Is it good?
You have to see it.
The trailers alone.
It is a horror movie. It is not a superhero movie. It is a horror movie, and it is really gross at points. But it disturbed me like I would have never guessed. In fact, I didn't even think it would be that good, but a friend recommended it. Huh? And it's basically, I mean, you know, it's not Clark Kent, but everything that happens is pretty much the same thing that happens in the Superman comic and how they discover the boy and raise him as their own. But that's where it starts to go wrong.
Well, you know, what happens when the kid who has the terrible twos has frickin' laser vision?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So, and see, that's what I like about the boy. You said it's gory. That's the one thing about The Boys that I love is that They're not afraid to show people blowing up. Like, there's one episode, they have this guy translucent. He's supposed to be invisible at will. And,
and his skin is impenetrable, yeah, so you can't shoot him. So the only way to get an explosive to be effective against him was to find the one natural opening in his body and insert the explosive there.
Yeah.
So when they had
it's Achilles' heel,
Achilles' anus. Yeah.
So that's the type of show that The Boys is, and it's a lot of fun.
And the cool thing is, not just that's how they have to do it, but when they do blow him up, holy crap, everybody gets covered with flesh and blood. And,
yeah, there's a lot of sinew and entrail.
Yes. I'm like, ugh. But it's good. It's good. So, those are a couple series, Tony, or actually three series that Tony and I have been talking about a lot. Now,
well, we finally got you watching Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, yeah. I finally bit the bullet and got CBS All Access and Discovery, and I hate the Klingons. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Oh, it's horrible.
Oh, my God. The redesign on the Klingons was just pointless.
They talk so damn slow.
Well, I think the problem is they have to because they're talking through 3 pounds of prosthetic makeup over their mouth. And it's good. I didn't mind necessarily the slight redesign that J.J. Abrams had on the Klingons in his movies. It was still a departure from the way they looked in The Next Generation, but it was still Klingon-ish. I got it. The Klingons in Discovery, oh, my God. I mean, they just, how much more prosthetics can we cake onto these people? It makes it nearly impossible for the characters to communicate or emote.
Since you've watched more than the first season, is there even a point to making a third offshoot of the Klingon race? I mean, we already have, two? Or three already?
Yeah, at least two. At least, I mean, if you go back to the original series, they were just basically dudes in blackface with
Manchus.
Fu Manchus. Now, I will say, I think in Star Trek Enterprise, they sort of try to retcon why some of the Klingons some of the Klingons didn't have the cranial ridges, and then some of them do. They kind of do a little bit of a retcon there. Mm. But no, they're. To the best of my knowledge, at this point, there is no point in the redesign. The only thing I can guess is because I know there is huge infighting between CBS and Paramount and who owns the rights to what when it comes to the Star Trek universe. And so I don't know if there's some weird, you can have the Klingons, but they can't look like Klingons. Some of that weird legal crap.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, everything that I saw in the promos and stuff for the shows, for CBS Access in general and their relationship with Star Trek, was that they had cemented like a full partnership with Paramount and all these things. And that my understanding was that they had access to anything from the past, any of the previous movies, TV shows, anything that was considered canon.
And I will say that the second season of Discovery is head and shoulders better than the first season.
It has to be.
It was so much better. And I'm really excited. There's some talk of a spinoff series based on essentially the second season of Discovery that is going to follow the adventures of Captain Pike aboard the Enterprise.
Okay.
And I'm kind of looking forward to that. Because the guy that they have playing Pike on Discovery is awesome.
Yeah, it even looks like the original bike. Yeah. So, yeah, and that's one thing. When I started this series, it's like, well, like I said, what I wanted to do was watch Picard. I still haven't watched that yet because Discovery's got me interested.
It's going to get ready to be disappointed.
Right? And then also...
Just muscle through the first season of Discovery and get to the second season of Discovery.
That's exactly what I'm having to do. Yeah, but there's moments that I'm like, okay, that was pretty cool. Okay, you ruined it. So, that's pretty much how it goes. But the other aspect of it is that not just Discovery, Picard, but they also have another Star Trek series on there, Lower Decks, which is like Rick and Morty less drunk meets Star Trek. So, it's funny, but you know what? It's not the greatest in the world.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a nice break.
I have been wrestling with myself because I've been watching Lower Deck. And I've been wrestling with the idea of, do I not like it because of what it is, or do I not like it because it is poking fun at the thing that I do find sacred?
Right.
I will go on record right now as saying that Star Trek Next Generation is my jam.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the original series for what it was, and I enjoy it, but Next Generation is anything in that Next Generation universe. So Next Generation, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, that is my iteration of Star Trek. And Lower Decks falls within that realm, that era of Star Trek. And so I'm trying to decide if I don't like it because of the show or because it's making fun of the thing I hold sacred. Yeah. And I feel bad. If I don't like it because the show's just not that good, I feel okay. But if I don't like it because it's making, well, that's not cool.
Right. You're not being fair.
That's right.
So, well, yeah, that's the thing. It's really nice. Like we were talking before, it's been a couple, well, maybe about a year or two, about 2 years. But Eric, I think you'll recall that we were all talking about this on the podcast where we said that the Orville was the best Star Trek series on television to date. And that was back when Discovery had just come out.
Yeah.
And Orville
is a hell of a lot better Star Trek series than Discovery is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Period.
Hands down. And yeah, I'll say that for sure. And that's the thing. The Orville worked in some of that humor on top of it, you know, and they still approached all the issues the way Gene Roddenberry would have. It was beautifully done. It was Star Trek. It had so much Star Trek feel, but they'd throw in the humor that you never saw anywhere else.
I don't know what direction I'm coming at this from, but like I loved Orville. Uh-huh. And I think I love Orville because you could tell that it was made as an homage to Star Trek Next Generation with a whole lot of love what Star Trek was at its very best.
Yeah.
Lower Decks almost seems like it's being done by a bunch of people who fucking hate Star Trek and want to make fun of everything about it.
Well, see, that's my problem. I don't mind if other people poke fun at Star Trek. That's fine. In fact, I usually think it's pretty damn funny.
Well, I
haven't seen the Orville yet, but it's on my list. I will get around to it. But for Star Trek to make fun of itself, undermines itself. And I mean, I take Star Trek fairly seriously as social commentary. Mm-hmm, and if you're a fan of the Next Generation, obviously you do too.
Oh yeah.
And well, and to make fun of those ideals just really undercuts it. And I hopefully this is wrong, but I read that they are going to find ways of integrating storylines and stuff so that they will flow between the actual shows and the Lower Decks. And I was like, oh, that's stupid. Yeah.
Leave it alone.
Right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, you know, Gil and I were talking about what CBS was patting themselves on the back recently because they have cast a non-binary individual to play a non-binary character for the first time in Star Trek history.
Oh, God.
And I went, no, there have been many non-binary characters within the realm of Star Trek. And then, just in conversation briefly, Gil and I started listing four or five different episodes where, no, wait, there's the one where Riker falls in love with this individual who's from a planet that's full of non-binary people, but she identifies as female, you know. So that storyline has already been tackled.
And and so them clapping themselves on the back is basically like, no.
Yeah, I want to go back and, all right, go back and look at y'all's history.
Yeah.
You've been tackling tough social commentary even the original series,
even, you know, Orville tackled non-binary.
They're supposed to have people on staff that do that. And think about this, how many Star Trek nerds are out there that know every single little detail? Hire one of these guys.
Exactly.
They will keep you on track. I was like, no, you can't do that. You've already done that.
Yeah.
You can't say this is the first non-binary character because you've done it before.
Exactly. Right. If you want to go push comes to shove, Data is technically a non-binary character.
Yeah.
He was assigned a male gender, but in fact, one of the episodes I watched recently was the one where Data created his own child.
Oh, yeah.
And the child was created as non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
And because Data wanted to allow the child to choose how it wanted to identify.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, man, this is a series. This is an episode that could have been done today and would get huge praise
yeah.
for how forward thinking it was.
It was a great episode.
It was a great episode.
Yeah, that's the thing. And again, Star Trek's always got it right when they do it right with the Gene Roddenberry world. But when you try to make Klingons look ugly, then...
Well, and I think that was one of the big knocks against Star Trek Discovery. And this has quickly become a Star Trek conversation.
Yeah, it
is. That was one of the knocks against Star Trek Discovery is at its very core, it didn't feel like Gene Roddenberry Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. In Gene Roddenberry Star Trek, it's supposed to be the very best of humanity.
Yeah.
Whereas in Discovery, they all kind of felt like they were sniping at one another, mm-hmm. and there wasn't that feeling of, no matter what, I got your back.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There was no camaraderie.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm with you on that one. So yeah, and again, there's all sorts of great choices of Star Trek, and you going back to Next Generation, I think that's probably the best choice.
Well, I tell you what, and I'm sure it has something to do with the uncertain time in our world right now, but it feels like wrapping myself in that warm blanket of childhood, so to speak, and like, oh, you know, I'll live in this Star Trek Next Generation world for a while where look out for each other. There is no money. You know, nobody wants
the best possible humanity. It's the best possible future that we can imagine as human beings. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So there you go. So there's all sorts of great streaming things, but some of them are not so great. Some of them you have to watch anyway because you're a fan. I don't know. But I want to touch on this before because I want to talk about your movies, Eric, right here in a second. But just launched on Netflix, they got a series called Ratched. It's Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest movie, and it's her origin story, so to speak. But holy crap, I didn't think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was a horror story. This one is, and the people that did American Horror Story are the ones that are doing this series. So,
well, that's when you first told me that there was a series coming out on Netflix, and it's called Ratched, and it's the nurse from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I went, wow, what a weird... like insulary character to, I mean, not necessarily an insulary character, but what a weird character to pull for a spinoff show. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
No. And then that's why I haven't taken any interest. I mean, I love One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and Nurse Ratched is one of the cinema's worst villains.
Yeah.
But why do I want to watch a series about her? Yeah. You know?
Well, that's occasionally, I don't need to know someone's origin to know that they're, that was one of my issues that I've always had with the prequels in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to see Hayden Christensen whine and cry to know that Darth Vader was a badass. Like, I don't care why he's a badass. I just know he's a badass and I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to Hayden Christensen, I think a lot less of Darth Vader than I did before.
Exactly. He's not as tough as they say. Well, I'll tell you what, with the Nurse Ratched, the only reason I am extremely interested, I guess there's two reasons, and the combination of the two put together. First of all, I loved the movie. That was like the movie. I loved that movie. I even went out and read Ken Kesey's book that it's based on after seeing the movie. I had to. And then the other aspect is it's the creators of American Horror Story. I love American Horror Story. I just love every season, how it's so much different and everything. And so with me, the combination of two is like, okay, I have to watch this. I have to. There's no denying. So I will. But
you
haven't got to yet.
You watch it and report back to me. And if you say it's good, then I'll give it a look.
Sir. I'll wait till the whole season's over before I let you know. So, all right. So, Eric, so you've been not streaming any series, really, but you've always been a huge horror movie buff. I mean, every time I need information about a horror movie or recommendations, you're the first person I think of to go to. And so you've been, and I've been watching your posts because you post reviews, et cetera, and talk about movies. You've been watching some good ones and some that look pretty darn creepy, and yet some that are classic. So talk about what you've been watching. What's been going on with you?
Well, yeah, I mean, the people who've been listening to the podcast for a long time will remember that I was previously the TV guy that was watching, you know, like 50 different series at once.
Yeah, that's right.
And it just got to the point that where it was work. And I was like, this is not why I want to watch TV. I want to relax and have a good time, or maybe not necessarily have a good time. But anyway, I basically cut myself off from almost all live shows. And, you know, I mean, I would watch shows sometimes on DVD or Blu-ray. But it, like Game of Thrones was the only thing I was watching for the last couple of seasons that, I'm not watching anything now that I can think of as far as series go, and not a live series anyway.
Right.
But I have been watching a lot of movies. Now, I've always kind of liked film noir, but I wasn't exactly sure what it is, and there's actually quite a lot of argument about the definition of film noir. But I've been watching a lot of that, a lot of classic film noir movies, and some of them are really, really dark. I mean, that's not there's no humor intended there. Yeah, right. Film
noir. Wait, is noir.
But I mean, this is post-code Hollywood, and some of the things that it's never explicit, but it's implied strongly enough for, unless you're a child, you will know what it is that's going on. There's one, I can't remember the movie, but there's one scene where a guy is like embracing the lead character, or the lead lady. She's in the, you know, in full view, and he's behind her caressing or whatever. And you see him go down. And as he does, as he disappears out of frame, he's behind her. And as he disappears out of frame, she gets this, she closes her eyes. And I mean, obviously something is being done to her.
Wow.
So, what's going on.
But there's a lot to be said for film noir, and I highly recommend it. It's not really our venue here as far as the nerd podcast, but it's some good stuff. But I've been watching a lot of horror, too. And there is now, have you guys seen Hereditary?
No, that doesn't sound familiar.
Oh,
no.
See it. See it. Now, I will tell you, the last 10 minutes, it kind of goes off the rails. No, it definitely goes off the rails. But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't discount everything that came before. And everything that came up to that point was awesome. And the filmmaker's name, the guy who wrote and directed, and you may have heard this, is Ari Aster. And his next film that he followed up with, Hereditary, is Midsommar.
Okay. Now, I know you've heard of Midsommar. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, because it got a good theatrical release and got really good reviews, and it deserved every single one of them. And it is one of the best horror movies that I've watched in a long time. Now, granted, The Wicker Man is one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And if
Which
you
one?
Have not seen, oh, you don't even need to ask that. Actually, I've not.
I assume you mean the Nicolas Cage one, right?
Yeah. No, I've actually purposely not seen that. All I know is the bees, not the bees. But the original is one of the greatest.
Yeah.
I won't see it. It's a horror film because it's not really. But it is. It's folk horror, and it's a musical, and it's just like nothing else you've ever seen.
Hmm.
Midsommar, people were accusing Midsommar as being a ripoff of this. It is not.
Oh.
It is folk horror, which is a legitimate subgenre of horror. And if you look it up on Google, you'll see the what defines it. And folk horror is some of my favorite horror of all time, and the Wicker Man is like at the top of that list. If you haven't seen it, see it. You will. I think you'll thank me.
I hope you will. Well, I fell out of love with horror movies, and I'm using air quotes when I say horror movies because it seemed like we reached that point where Saw became real popular, and so that became what horror movie was going to be, and they started cranking out. You know,
Hostel.
Yeah, well, it became torture porn,
it was. Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so I fell out of love with watching horror movies. So I'm excited to hear about some good, genuinely suspenseful horror movies rather than just.
There's a lot out there. I just don't have a list of it, but you know, I mean, I've started writing these down for recommendations. I was right with you. I mean, horror was dead to me for a while. There was just, you know, I mean, my classics I would go back and watch again and again and again. But there was no new horror coming out that was of any interest to me whatsoever. But that slowly started to change, and some of the better horror movies that I've seen, period, have been made in the last 10, 15 years. And so Midsommar is something that you should see regardless of whether you've seen Hereditary. But I would recommend seeing Hereditary first because it really does kind of prime you for what's coming in Midsommar.
I don't know how I missed that. When it came out in 2018, I just don't know how I missed that.
I heard it was coming out, and I was like, it's never going to play anywhere near me. And it did. It played in Carbondale, if you can believe that. And I was like, oh, I am so there opening weekend. And my expectations were so high after Hereditary, even though it had a kind of a lame ending, I was so excited by what he had done that I was there and I was really hyped. I was like, it's going to disappoint me. I just know it is because the other one had a bad ending, blah, blah, blah. I walked out of the theater with my jaw on the ground. I was like, oh my God, where are these? Where we need more people like Ari Aster to make these movies.
What's the production house? Is that another one of the Blumhouse?
I think it was.
Because it seems to me like Blumhouse has become the name that is synonymous with really great horror stuff right now.
And then there's A24 or A42, and then there's one other small indie studio that makes really good horror and science fiction. The guys that did the, I can't remember, about the female android robot and the guy at the secluded place.
Something Machina.
Ex Machina. We talked about that. We all pretty much loved it. But that was from, I think, the same studio. But yeah, these great new horror movies are coming out, not from the studios, but from little indie filmmakers. Yeah. And you got to understand, for the indie filmmaking market to have made a comeback at all is amazing. I mean, indie cinema after the 90s was the high point for indie cinema. And then, 2000 started slowing going down, and then you didn't see much independent stuff at the theater at all. But this, it's coming back, and horror is coming back in a big way. The other movie that I'm going to tell you, and it's another dual films from the same director writer.
Okay.
His name is Robert Egger, and his first film, which is what made me sit up and take notice of him, was the. Oh my God, I can't remember the name of it. It's the. It takes place during the old Quaker days and The Witch. Yeah, duh. have either of you guys seen The Witch?
No.
Uh-uh. Oh my God, you guys got to get caught up.
Well, see, we're in the middle of nowhere.
We've been too busy.
But I mean, they're on video and they're streaming. They're very, very accessible. So, my homework assignment is to see The Hereditary and to see The Witch, because those are both going to prime you for the next phase for both of these filmmakers. Ari Aster made Midsommar and Robert Egger made The Lighthouse. Now, The Lighthouse, I can't exactly call it horror, but there are some very strong horror elements to it. It's we were talking earlier about weird stuff that we have trouble understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this movie is very cryptic, and you're going to walk out of it probably scratching your head and only being able to put a few pieces of it together. That was the same for me.
Okay.
I actually had to go home and Google it and actually read some theories, and then it started to come together. It's based on heavily based on Greek mythology, specifically, Prometheus, the one who brought fire to man.
Right.
And I can't remember the other.
I'm looking at this. I remember that when that came out now.
Well, The Lighthouse is one that's got that Robert Pattinson in it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh. Robert Pattinson, yes. William Dafoe.
Does he sparkle?
Yes.
No, he does not. But that's the one. Well, when Robert Pattinson was announced as being the new Batman, everybody was like, oh my God, the sparkly vampire. And his supporters were saying, no, Robert Pattinson from The Lighthouse. Watch The Lighthouse. Yeah. And that's.
Well, I remember The Witch came out, but I remember because it was when you saw the posters, it said The Witch is two V's instead of a W.
Yeah, I didn't care for that convention. And it was very confusing.
Yeah, I was like, what? I don't know. I remember that when it's like, oh, watch The Witch. What? No, Vitch.
I've known a couple of Vitches in my time.
Yeah. But yeah, now that I was looking back on it, I'm like, okay, I remember that now.
Those are four movies that are really, I would recommend to anyone who has the least bit interest in horror and seeing what the up and coming young filmmakers are doing now. And they're pumping out these films at an amazing rate. And I mean, quality films that are, less than 2 or 3 years apart.
Well, and I think when it comes to trying to succeed in the new model, so to speak, the independent horror films really kind of lend themselves to working really well. If you've got quality cinematography, you've got great directing, you can do a really phenomenal horror film on a very small budget. Yes,
absolutely.
And, the problem that I think is, a lot of the major studios are worried about chasing that $1 billion box office number.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And at least right now, that model simply doesn't work. So
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, they think back to all of the, you know, inexpensive film horror films that went out, you know, went on to make billions of dollars at the box office. I mean, just off the top of my head, like the Blair Witch Project is probably the most famous of those. It cost them $17,000.
Yeah.
That is nothing.
Yeah.
And it made billions and played forever at the theater. And so that's all the bean counters at the studio see, is that, you know, this low investment, huge return. But they don't realize that a lot of effort and genuine integrity and the people who made these movies wanted to make a good movie. They didn't make it just to make some money. I mean, right. I'm sure that some of them were hoping that they'd be able to make some money out of it, but they made it because they enjoy the act of making good horror films. And the studios just don't get that, and you know, and that's why there's so much direct to video trash.
Yeah.
And both of these movies, I don't know if the first features for these guys like Hereditary and The Witch played, not, they definitely didn't play theaters in Southern Illinois. They probably played in the big cities and maybe even the medium markets.
But, well, you know, I was talking about the indie film market. One of the things I've been doing recently, I've been doing sound for a local filmmaker here, and we're doing it's an anthology movie. It's called The 13 Slaves of Christmas, and it's supposed to be out by Christmas, but COVID ruined everything, so we don't know. We're still struggling, but we got our part done, and we filmed Kringle the Christmas Clown, a little short horror film. And just went, okay, first of all, while filming it, no big deal. I'm watching this and re-going through lines, reshooting scenes. Well, I saw the finished product. The director showed it to me after he edited everything together. And holy cow, that was scary. And I was there. I was watching this kid and this guy. And oh, my gosh.
You saw the magic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still scary.
And it was, and he put that on a budget of like maybe $5 for sandwiches or something. I take that back. It's probably a little bit higher because the director of photography really good, knew what he's doing. I think that's also the difference too. But I can't wait till the whole anthology. I want to see what these other companies are putting out, because I know mine was scary. So, well, all right. So Eric, you recommend, let's see, Hereditary, Midsummer, The Witch, and The Lighthouse. Are those the four you're saying? Okay.
Yeah. All right. Those four are very, very great examples of the best horror has to offer right now, in my opinion, my not so humble opinion.
All right. Well, I'm going to check those out, and I'll verify whether you're right or not.
Now, I have revisited a series that I loved as I think I saw it was made back in the 90s. And it's called The League of Gentlemen. No, it has nothing to do with that horrible adaptation of Alan Moore's comic. Yeah,
I just saw that because my wife wanted to see where the Invisible Man was a good guy, and so I had to show that film to her. So
so bad. It's just The League of Gentlemen is composed of four guys. I can't remember the fourth guy's name because he doesn't do much acting. He's more of a writer than than an actor. But the three guys who basically formed this comedy troupe. Well, it's not a comedy. They came up with this idea of a northern English town that okay. Let me start off. These guys are all very hardcore horror fans. In fact, The Wicker Man is, I think, two or three of them said that it's their favorite movie of all time. And they created this. It's kind of like Kids in the Hall and Monty Python to a certain extent. These four guys play most of the characters. And a lot of the characters are women. In fact, some of the funniest characters are women. Some of the best characters in the entire series are women that they're playing. But it's a comedy, and it is very, very funny, but it's also really dark. And I mean, it's informed by a lot of horror tropes. And in the third season, it's the comedy just completely dried up and went away. They even changed the theme song completely, and it got really, really dark. I mean, there was humor in an ironic kind of way, but there was no laughing out loud like there was during the first two seasons.
Oh, wow.
But it's it was on all the three seasons were on Netflix up until not too long ago. Oh. They took it down. there is a character in the show named Papa Lazaru,
okay,
who is in blackface. Now,
Yeah.
Now, I totally understand that, and if people don't want to watch it because this character's in it, I can't blame them. But I think that taking it down because the character that you see in the cast list is wearing blackface, it makes a lot of assumptions and is. And I am very much a liberal. I'm very much a liberal, mm-hmm. but that is knee jerk liberalism at its worst.
Well, there was an episode of Golden Girls. They got pulled out of syndication because the ladies were wearing mud masks. But when they were on camera, it looked like they were in blackface.
Oh,
the joke was that one of the ladies' grandson had fallen in love with and was going to marry this black girl. And the joke is she's bringing her family over to meet the family. Right. And they walk out wearing these mud masks. So the joke is that it looks like they're in blackface.
It's racial humor, but it is not racist.
That is such a line that doesn't seem to be able to be drawn right now. We were talking about, Gil and I were talking about Blazing Saddle.
How
ridiculously funny Blazing Saddle is. And if you watch that movie and you see it as racist, then you miss the point of the humor. You know, in my opinion, if you see it as racist, you're part of the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's so great.
One of the main writers was Richard Pryor. I mean, people should take that as like, and I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched any interviews of Richard Pryor, but I mean, the guy, in addition to being fall down funny, I mean, he was a really intelligent guy. And I've seen him in vintage interviews talking about racism and what it's like to be a black man. And I was like, you know, where were people? No one was listening to this guy back then. Yeah, now, finally, things are starting to come into discussion. But he saw so much of that, and that is very much a lot of his humor is in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
It's just because the word the N word is used, mm-hmm. it doesn't mean that the person who wrote it into the script is racist or the person delivering the line is racist. They're poking fun at racists. They're deflating racists.
I was telling Gil not too long ago. I watched the first three or four Police Academy movies, and he said, "Well, how do they hold up?" And I said, "I think they're funny as hell, but there is some racist, sexist elements to it. But when you watch it, it's always the quote unquote bad guy that is delivering the racist or homophobic or sexist lines." They're always cast as the bad guy. So, yes, that humor is in there, but it's never glorified as a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's stuff like that's the nuance that people are missing right now.
Well, context is everything.
Exactly.
And part of that context is the society that existed when these shows were made.
Oh, yeah.
You have to take that into consideration. Things that were considered perfectly acceptable then that are outrageously offensive now, that's society is progressing.
In my opinion, I've been watching old episodes of All in the Family, and I was surprised at how many times Archie Bunker used the N-word.
Oh, yeah.
I was just surprised. I just didn't expect it, and I'm like, huh. Okay. So, but yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, that's a great note.
You can't get anywhere near that now. You can't even talk about it, which is not helping the racial discussion. I mean, we need to stop walking around on eggshells and have conversations and say, look, you know, tell me what it is that you find offensive or the things that are the in behavior in my, I can't speak for all white people, but, you know, what is it that I'm doing that can make things easier for you? Or what am I doing that's making things harder for you that I may not be aware of?
Yeah. Well, and that was, even in All in the Family, the context in which his character was using the term was not necessarily as one to be celebrated. It was,
Well,
Archie Bunker was the butt of the joke.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. Well, all right. Well, I'll tell you what. That's a great way to end. We started talking about COVID. Now we ended with racial strife. That's pretty much America right now. So
that's pretty much the first half of 2020
in a nutshell. So let's see what happens with the rest of it. So that's a great place to end this episode. Eric, it was awesome having you come back here with us. I've missed everybody. I think Tim Coker had the plans. He was, and I just can't get a hold of Tim Mattson. He quit Facebook. It's hard to get a hold of him. So, but we'll try to do this again here pretty soon because I need to get more of these episodes because I need to get it out of my system.
That's right.
So,
well, I didn't realize I had so much in me.
Yeah, there you go. See, now you know. I mean, actually, you'll have more too, I'm sure, because we're going to find other nerdy reasons. And I want to see if you watch Legion and see
my
what
wife
you think.
Sitting out in the parking lot. This is the text message I get. So,
Spanky.
Yeah,
Spanky,
I probably need to go.
All right, so that's a great place, great way to end the podcast. So, well, I'm Gil T. Wilson.
I'm Tony Collins.
I'm Eric Billingsley.
And like we say each and every episode, stay nerdy.
Stay nerdy.